Okay. Well, today we're going to be talking to St. Nick's Parish. St. Nick's Alliance had several different reorganizations. But before we get started, though, we always talk about things that are happening in Washington. And Glo, any news?
Not a lot, just a little. The only update they had is that the most recent proposal review is still going on, and the EPA still anticipates announcing the selections for the next round of job training grants in late May. So things have not changed. It's moving slowly, but it is moving, so all is well.
Can I ask a quick question? This is Bob from St. Nick's.
Sure.
The last conversation, or last time we were had one of these calls, did you say that if a participant or an organization hasn't heard yet, that's a good sign?
That's a very good sign.
Okay.
The first 15 days, and it sometimes goes a little longer after you've submitted your grant, they'll filter those who don't move on to the qualifying criteria, the meat of it, the ranking criteria. So you're all, if you haven't heard from them, you're all in the competition now. Then what they do is they'll assign different questions to different reviewers, and they'll go through them, and they'll start ranking them and trying to pick holes in them and go through them. The next thing you're going to hear will be someone from the person who actually submitted the as the principal. You have to be a little careful on that, because sometimes the people who basically have the boots on the ground may not even know or hear that they got the award. It'll go to the person that's on the grant as the administrator, and they'll notify them. Sometimes, even occasionally, it used to go through the congressional office, but it'll come back, and they'll indicate that you've been awarded the grant. That'll probably be, we're thinking about, in beginning of June. We were talking about end of May. Now it's kind of slide beginning of June. So if you don't hear anything till June, that's fine. We'll be having more PLCs and keeping everyone informed, and we'll hear from Rachel where they're at. Sometimes these things slip a little bit. After that, then the award, then we start moving over towards your work plan, and we look at you talk to your regional coordinator. And the time between the award and the work plan is when you want to kind of do some reorientation, and now you got to get serious. This is actually, we're going to actually have to do this. So at that point, you start doing any tweaking that you need to do, and you get that agreement with the regional coordinator. And at that point, of course, that usually happens in the summer. And of course, between now and then, we'll have our annual all-grantee meeting. Glo, do you want to just give a quick briefing on the dates and what's happening?
Yeah, the next all-grantee meeting will be in Alexandria, Virginia on August 9th and 10th, travel dates August 8th and 11th. This meeting is for all of the EPA-funded job training grantees and PLC members. Through a cooperative agreement that HMTRI has with the EPA, we are able to pay for your lodging for 3 nights and some of the meals. So the only thing that the participant is responsible for is your travel to get there and some other meals. So this is, if you are at all serious about developing a job training program, this is where you can meet with the grantees that are actually doing the work. It's a fantastic place for people to network and learn from each other and from EPA. So I would highly recommend, if you can, try to come.
And what they need to do is just contact you. Do you want to
right.
give them your email address?
My email address is ghanne@eicc.edu.
Okay. And if you haven't signed up to be on our listservs and get announcements for these PLCs, just send her a note to add me to your list, just in case you haven't, because if you do, you'll get post-session notes some other information as soon as we get it. If you get the grant, it's absolutely really important that you come to the meeting. If you don't get the grant, it's also important to come to the meeting. If you can get your transportation to Alexandria, after that, it doesn't really cost you much, maybe a couple of meals. The reason being is all of the regional coordinators will be there. It'll give you a chance to sit down with the regional coordinator and talking on a one-on-one basis with them about your grant, whether you get it or don't get it. So by then, all the new grantees will be awarded. Those who may not get it may have a chance to sit down privately and talk to them, because the next round, if all goes well, will be in November. And so it's not long before we have to look at re-upping again or submitting a new grant. So it's an excellent opportunity to get started on the new round. Now, the next thing, this leads right into the big elephant in the room, which we talk about on most of these PLCs. We don't know anything more than you all know about funding of EPA. We hear about these horrible cuts, but at the same time, we hear about some positive things. There are two congressmen, Representative John Cato and Esty, who want to actually reauthorize the Brownfields Bill of 2006. The Brownfields Bill expired in 2006, but they want to extend it to 2022, and they want to actually increase the funding for Brownfields. So while we hear about cuts, the original White House budget called for a tremendous cut in Brownfields, but something like 42%. But at the same time, that's just a blueprint from the White House, and it's really up to Congress. It starts in the House, and then we get this agreement in the Senate, and they have to come up to an agreement. There is lots of support for these programs in the House and the Senate, and tremendous support from the mayors. So we like to be optimistic. We haven't heard anything from EPA, which they probably don't know any more than we do. Nobody knows until this really happens. It'll be happening in the next couple months. So we keep our eye on it and want to keep everyone informed. There are 450,000 brownfields around the country, and only about 60,000 have been remediated. So there's a lot of good things going on. They're leveraged about 1 to 18 in terms of the dollars spent for the dollars that are saved and produced. So we're rooting. And, of course, we always suggest that our grantees stay in touch with their community and do the good work they've been doing and continue. In fact, we often have our grantees come to our congressmen come to graduations. A really good example of this was back in, actually it was St. Nick's. Remember, Glow? We had a workshop in Brunswick. It was for St. Nick's. And actually the regional coordinator came in, and we had they came in with a big check, and
oh, yeah.
There was a lot of photo ops during lunchtime. In fact, we told them they couldn't do it, but they wanted to present a check to the organization. and in came the press and the congressman, and everybody was there, the mayor. So we had a good time, but it's always a good time. And it's actually good. It's a good thing to do. The elected officials like to do it. After all, it's in their district, particularly the congressmen, and we encourage people to invite their congressmen as a courtesy, whether they can come or not, to just announce, send to their office that you're a little bit about your program. Hopefully they know about it, what's happening, when your graduation is going to be, and that you'd like to have them attend and give them the dates. And perhaps you'll hear back. Maybe they'll send a representative, or perhaps not. But that's okay. We always like to keep them involved. Today we're going to, and I'm going to put some other announcements in the post-session notes about some things that are going on and webinars you may want to listen to or attend. They're not directly involved in environmental job development and placement, but they're more things like funding sources for brownfields in general, and they're good things, background information to give you about what's happening in terms of brownfields in general. So today, we're really fortunate to talk to St. Nick's Alliance. And as I said earlier, before we started, they've kind of been a favorite of mine. I kind of think of them as the East Coast Hunters Point. It's a tough neighborhood. I remember a couple of years ago we talked to them, and they were indicating that you have 113 major pollution sources in your area, in your target group. 13 toxic waste emitters, 390 waste sites, transfer stations, polluted waterways. You have everything there. Everything except maybe jobs, and it's tough. And 2 years ago, I think was the last time we talked, we were kind of in the height of this recession. And some of the, you know, we were talking about what are some of the problems over St. Nixon, and they're no different than many areas. Despite all of the issues, there were, St. Nixon was at the time struggling with a local economy that had tanked in that community. There was intense competition with organized labor. They had people on the bench in organized labor, and while St. Nixon's, you may be involved, and we'll hear more about your involvement with organized labor, you're putting people out there competing with the people that may be on the bench looking for jobs. You, at the time, there was an issue with ex-offenders and placing ex-offenders in the whole placement process. And of course, with every grantee, it's an issue of EPA funding. This is a small amount of funding, and you have to find ways of leveraging that funding. And sometimes that can be really difficult. So with that introduction, and I'll turn this over to the experts. They've had six re-ups, which is outstanding, starting in 2002. And, of course, it hasn't always been smooth riding. They haven't continually gotten re-up grants. There was a time when you had to survive without EPA Environmental Workforce Development job training funding, but you got back into the game. So I have to hand that to you. So I'll turn it over to Bob and CQ and let you all go from there. Tell us about your program.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak today. My name is CQ Marie Kelman, or CQ for short. I serve as the Skills Training Program Manager here at St. Nick's Alliance, and I work closely with the Environmental Remediation Technician Training. I work alongside Bob Din, who is our Account Manager, Job Developer. And in terms of my role, I do meet the participants prior to them enrolling. In terms of the recruitment and outreach process, I'm involved in the screening of them. Any of the New Yorkers, ideally those who are unemployed or underemployed, and even those who live in North Brooklyn are the ones that we meet through our information sessions. So anyone who's interested in the training, express an interest, they do come in to do an information session where we give them a thorough overview of the training, the certifications, the support with job placement. They do take a test to become qualified for the training. They have to score an adult basic education test to get into the training. We look for those who have some previous experience, maybe with other physical labor, have a passionate interest in the environment, and are looking to build a career, because we focus on career paths and supporting folks with their career development. The training is 6 weeks long, and we work with an outside vendor as well for the hard skills training, for the certifications that we offer, but we also believe in the importance of soft skills. So there is a portion of the training as well that focuses on communication skills, problem solving, time management, decision making, and that actually the first week of the training is where we do a lot of icebreaker activities and teamwork activities to get a sense of the participants that we have. Our group is usually, per cohort, 15 to 20 students that we have, job seekers, and we get to really know them the first week, and during the second week is when we begin with the hard skills training, and we have a really close relationship with a vendor that we use. It's Big Apple, and they do all of the hard skills training, the certifications, which include the 40-hour HAZWOPER, the 10-hour OSHA with a focus on construction, confined space training, asbestos handler training, city, state exam that they take to get those certifications. And we really work, even though we have a small team here at St. Nick's Alliance with skills training, I feel as though we work really close and get to know the job seekers that we work with, and we support them through any of the challenges that they face. Some folks have been formerly incarcerated. Some people just have all kinds of other challenges or supportive services they need help with, even housing. But we try to incorporate all of those things, and we even work with our graduates after they complete the program for alumni events. We actually have an event coming up tomorrow where we're bringing back our graduates to support them and doing a networking opportunity. So we work with them for soft skills, hard skills, and we also support them with job placement. is sort of the program in a nutshell. It's a 6-week training program, and I mentioned the certifications that they receive. I know Bob spends a lot of his time building, and he does a great job building relationships with different employers. And we also work with our vendor who has some leads that they connected us with in terms of employment opportunities. Bob, I don't know if you wanted to talk about the angle that you take when it comes to building the relationships for our graduates.
I think one of the emphasis, when especially when talking to employers, is really the critical part is those soft skills, because what I find over and over again is that employers feel that they're willing to teach, you know, as long as the person is willing to learn. So our emphasis while they're in our facility is really focusing, again, on those soft skills, and those soft skills being showing up on time, when we say on time, we basically say here if the reporting time for a particular employer is 9 o'clock and you show up at 9, you're late. So you need to be there at least 15 or 20 minutes. That we also talk about absenteeism and how that would affect your career path. We're starting to require, or starting to ask, not require, but ask our participants to really give us, once they get or have gone through the actual obtaining of the certifications, but when they sit down with me, I need to have like a 90-day view of what's going to go on in their lives in the next 90 days. So if they're doctor's appointments, or if there are vacations coming up, or if there's a meeting with your, or if there's a court date, a parole officer scheduled times, we need to know that. So we need to be able to either have those things worked around, or that's something that we need to talk to the employer about beforehand. So this way, there's no, like, no one's caught off guard that, you know, you've just started working and you're already asking for a day off and it's only been 2 weeks. You know, that I think what happens with stuff when situations like that, that after all this training and the person's out there trying to start to building their career, that could be a setback for them, you know. So we're doing, as I said, on our part that we do here, there is that big emphasis on soft skills because, again, employers that we've been dealing with or the ones I've been building relationships with, all they keep saying is, I just need somebody who will show up on time.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is a really good point, and we think of this program as being hard skills and training and giving them all these certs, but you just pointed out something that really nobody has talked about in the past of preparing these students but preparing your employers that before you even employ, if you disarm him by saying, well, you know, he does have these court dates and he's got to report to his parole officer, but he's reliable, and that's something that even the graduate may not even have the courage to talk to his employer about, and then all of a sudden he shows up late or something. He may have a transportation problem. Yep. So you've pre-warned him so that the employer could say, as long as I know ahead of time, that's okay, I could work around that. That's really a really good piece of advice, because I don't know how many grantees that are placing people think of that. I think that's a great idea.
And you know, it actually works. We just had a example of that where I have reached out to this one employer, and they really wanted to bring this person on board, and I said to them, and he said to them, which was great, you know. So we both said it, that he had these things he needed to take care of. Because he was honest with them, they said, okay, when you're ready, give me a call. you know, and when the following week he was ready, he called and I called. And I believe he's employed now.
Fantastic. Now, do you, when you train, do you have a regular workday type of training, or do you have intermittent classes at different points in time?
Yep. Well, we actually, most of our training and the expectation for the participants who are interested in our training is that it's going to be full day Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 4:30. And the first week is just getting to know and building that relationship with the class that we have. And so for the soft skills, it's a full day of that, and also for the hard skills as well. And so throughout the training, it's a combination of both, and that is a requirement for the training. And it gets them used to the hours for a full-time job and showing up on time and being present, and the expectation if something comes up that you notify us in advance. So just preparing them for employment and letting them know, not only do you have to be present here, but you can look at this like your first day of working, because when your first year, you're not able to have the luxury of calling out or taking vacation. So just preparing yourself.
What happens when they're late? Have you had much problem with tardiness or have a disciplinary thing?
Yeah, we do. We have had problems with tardiness, but we have we do case management as well, and so we meet with our job seekers one-on-one. We do check-ins with them as well, because the training actually is, half of the training is conducted in our office, and the other train portion of it is conducted with our vendor for the hands-on component. And so we definitely get to meet with them frequently and even follow up with calls and emails to let them know about what we've noticed. And they've, because we're so persistent, they have gotten into the habit now, if something comes up, to notify us, which I think they've shared with us in their previous life. They didn't realize the importance of those things and the importance of professionalism. So we've noticed a change, actually, from the beginning of the training towards the end.
Mm-hmm. What about drug testing? Is there a drug policy that you all follow?
Yep, we do drug testing, drug screening at the beginning, and we've actually been able to work with our participants. Maybe unlike some other programs, we don't necessarily turn someone away. We work with them, and we continuously drug test them and let them know we want, if they're interested and committed in this career path, that's something they are going to have to give up, and we work with them. I know, Bob, you worked closely with one of our graduates who was looking to apply for, I think, the DEP. And
right.
And we were testing him a few times, actually, before his test with his drug test with the DEP.
Yeah, and this participant, again, he even before he applied for the DEP, he said, like, he didn't feel he could pass a drug test. So we then went into that mode of, okay, what you need to do to clean up. You know, and, you know, knowing that the, especially with the DEP, it takes a while before you can fill out an application, but before your first interview and before they do any drug testing, it could be like anywhere between a 4 to 6 week period. So you do have time to clean up. And again, when we talk about drug testing, for the most part, we're probably talking about marijuana use. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, seems like the two big challenges when we talk about placement is the drug issue and then, of course, the ex-offender issue. And I don't know which is more difficult. They both...
Probably for us, I think it's more about the drug issue. The ex-offender issue, especially now in New York, there is basically, they can't really ask on the application. If they find out, or if they do research, if it's not related to the job that they're doing, they can't really dismiss that person. But for the most part, we're finding that a lot of ex-offenders, especially if they're an ex-offender that has has been institutionalized more than one time, or at least 2-3 times, they turn out to be some of our best workers.
Interesting. You know, it's interesting. We've been talking about ex-offenders, and it depends where you are in this country. We've had some grantees that said, I can't place them. I just can't. It might be around a federal lab. And then in your case, you're in a band-of-box state, and it's a little easier job. It's very interesting to see the issue as you go around. And it's probably something you have to think about before you start your program, that if you're in a community that seems to be compassionate and it's not an issue, and we're talking about construction trades often, depending on your curriculum, there are a lot of ex-offenders in the construction trades, and it really doesn't make a big difference. And as you said, they make excellent workers. But in other places, it's a difficult situation because if they've got the wrong set of employers or the type of industry in the area that they've already talked to them in their needs assessment, they say, well, we just can't go there. Then they have to go back in their recruitment process and turn away people they really don't want to turn away. But it's one thing about this program is we're rationing seats. You're rationing 15 to 20 seats. And you've got the overall thing is you've got to be able to have a shot at placing those. Now, in your case, you have a shot, and it's great. In many of the programs, 30, 40% ex-offenders, maybe higher, 100% in some cases. So it really depends on your location, and you have to make sure before you start that you've got a set of employers that are willing to talk with you. Now, St. Nick's has got other workforce programs, don't they? So you're kind of embedded in terms of your employer's relationship with your organization, aren't you?
Yeah, we are. I mean, we also have a construction skills as well as CDL certification. So in a sense, there's almost like a cross-pollination between the environmental remediation and construction industry, as you said before. And then sometimes there is with the folks who are taking our CDL classes, I found that we just started our relationship with the DEP, and I'm finding, like, at least here, having a CDL license means a lot to them.
So that's the Department of Environmental?
Department of Environmental Protection for New York City, or New York State, yeah.
What about your relationship with organized labor? We were talking that last time we talked to you. Or generally about your job market. Is it still really tough? How does that look right now?
It's actually getting better because we've actually built a partnership with an organization here they've been around not for that long, but it's called Pathway to Apprenticeships. The woman who founded the program, she actually was an ex-labor lawyer. So we work in tandem with them. She notifies us and any of our participants, or actually anyone in New York City who registers with them, she will notify them as far as what union apprenticeships are coming up. Okay, and then we then go into action as far as bringing that to our folks and saying, here are some union apprenticeships that are happening, and we start to prep them. Actually, they start to prep them. The other thing is that we are now, we have been, but we just discovered that we are a direct entry provider, which means that we are working with a Local 12, which is an environmental remediation union. And what direct entry means, it doesn't mean you're guaranteed a union job. It means you don't have to wait. If there's a line or a online application process, being direct entry and building that relationship with Local 12 means our folks don't have to wait on that line or fill out or go through that online application. They go direct to an interview.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, so we're working. We want to work with the unions because for us, you know, we feel that the folks that we're training are their workforce for the future. But in order to get into a union, you have to go through an apprenticeship program.
Right. But the fact that you have a direct entry is really something. We encourage most of the grantees. Again, it depends what kind of community you're in. If you're down here in the Carolinas, it's a different situation. But if you're in areas with a lot of federal labs or facilities, or if you're in an urban area, the getting involved with the local is a great idea because they're looking for people sometimes.
Yep.
And you're giving them screened, reliable candidates that they can move into that program, and they might even be able to get on your board, your advisory board, or be a guest speaker at some point, which is a great way to move into your placement.
Well, everything that you just mentioned is what we're working towards.
Fantastic. That is great. And when where are you in your cohort? You ought to be about placement right now. Is in your cohort, your training?
I'll let CQ take over, but we just graduated an environmental remediation, I guess, about 2 weeks ago?
Yes, for March 10th, we graduated our first class of this, of 2017. And we work with them, our graduates, as they complete the training and they graduate. And so we work with them as they graduate. And so we work with them cohort by cohort to support them with employment. And even before they leave or graduate, we also bring in, during those workplace success and those soft skills, we bring in graduates as well to share about their experience and talk about, you know, how the importance of the soft skills and the role that plays and why they've been successful on the job because of those soft skills. So they get to paint a picture for the current students about the reality post the in-class training. And then, as mentioned, we do bring them back here for alumni engagement opportunities. We even support this year. We're going to be supporting. We have some funds available to support our environmental remediation technician graduates with recertification. So if anyone is facing any challenges with as they're budgeting with the new jobs, we've been able to support them with updating their licenses and their certifications, and also supporting them with financial literacy and financial empowerment, providing them with information about employers and demands in the career field, and making sure they keep their resumes updated for future opportunities.
That is great. Do you charge for your recertification, or do you just offer it?
No, we actually, at the moment, we've been able to, we're offering it for free. We're covering the cost of the recertifications for the graduates.
It's a limited number because we got a grant from one of the a local utility to help us with that.
That is fantastic. That is everything you should be doing, calling in your graduates because they may know of jobs in their company where they're looking for people and looking for recommendations, bringing them in as guest speakers, bringing them in graduation to keep your graduates coming back, the recertification, to the extent that you could keep them engaged on social media also helps. All of those things are really the keys to placement. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Sounds like you're operating on all cylinders. It sounds
we're
like.
We're trying to.
We're trying, yes. The resources we have.
Well, we try to keep these down to 30 minutes. So, but I'll tell you, I think you're doing a great job, and keep up the good work. And anyone have any questions that are on the call?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
This is Angela in New York. I'm in Rochester, and our program, of course, is in Puerto Rico, but I really want to give you guys like a huge shout out for becoming a direct entry, because I don't know if you know how huge that is, but it is absolutely amazing. Congratulations.
No, we understand how big it is, and you know we're working to take full advantage of it.
Let's just
unions,
say.
Yeah, unions in urban areas are king. It's tough. And, you know, you want to go to the city manager, you want to, you know, where, first you've got to identify the locals that, that work for you. But to the extent that you can get them in, I mean, sometimes they're really amicable, and they'll volunteer facilities and help you out with your program. It really depends on the local.
Exactly, and that's one of the things that it's a two-prong approach. It's not only talking to employers, but also going there and talking to different locals, different unions in the area, because we, for us, that's part of the career pathway that we want to instill or want to help our graduates with. There are good non-union jobs out there, but there are better union jobs out there. Yeah.
Right, right. That's right. And there are tons of the small guys. You've got lots of scrap yards and all kinds of things that wastewater is probably tough for you all in New York, but a lot of patronage jobs out there also, which is an issue. But you certainly have lots to work with. And just getting out, it sounds like you're getting out and talking to some of these people, which you really have to do.
Yeah, and as you mentioned earlier, we're also working closely with not only like our local council representatives, but also on the state level as well.
Fantastic. Yeah, those local, the politicians and the local politicians can really help you out. And I'm not talking about from a funding point of view. I'm really talking about a contacts.
Yep.
They get around and they know everybody in your target communities. And to the extent that they know your program well, you never know who they're going to drop a recommendation to, who will be contacting. You never know where it's going to come from. So that's great.
For us to make that partnership or have that communication with our local politicians, a lot of it is for outreach, you know, for them to have them work, or us to work with their staff to get the word out of us, the programs that we offer. Because the programs that we do offer, as you well know, it's free.
Right.
You know,
fantastic.
We want more people to take advantage of it.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you very much for the briefing.
Yeah.
And sorry, Larry couldn't be on the call, but Bob and CQ, keep up the good work. And hopefully we'll keep in touch, and hopefully we'll see you at that grantee meeting after you get your re-up.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, I hope so. Thank you.
I hope so. Thanks so much.
Talk to you all soon. Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Bye.